Hi, I'm Julie. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much for having me. Welcome to the newcomers, and I'm so happy to see so many birthdays. It's just, it's a testament that Alcoholics Anonymous works, I am from Pasadena. I have a home group there. It's called the Rose City Speakers Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's on Thursday nights at 8 o'clock, and you're all welcome to join us. We'd love to have you there. I have a sponsor. Her name is Terry B., and I have a sobriety date. It's June the 29th of 2013. That's also my natal birthday, so I celebrate my AA birthday and my natal birthday on the same day. And I like to say that the gift of sobriety was the best gift I ever got. I got my life back the day that I came into these rooms, the second, third, fourth time, whatever time it was. This isn't my first time in the program. I have 9.5 years. I was sober before. The time before I had 6 years. I had around 6 years, and I was very active in the program. I had a sponsor. I would attend meetings. I worked the steps. I had commitments, all that stuff. And somewhere at around year three, I thought, you know what, I don't know if I thought to myself, like, you know, I'll take it from here, but life just got really, really good. I got really busy. And it started off with little things like missing a meeting or forgetting to call my sponsor, but those things kind of added up. Me not participating, not being an active member of this program. And I lived that way for 3 years. So in total, that's 6 years. I had 6 years of sobriety the first time. And those last 3 years, I was very dry, and I didn't even realize that I was dry. And Alcoholics Anonymous just kind of became this thing that faded into the background. I no longer identified as an active member of this program. During that time, I met a man, and he was a very, very good man. He still is a good man to this day. And I ended up getting engaged, and we ended up getting married. And I had known this man since I was about 15 years old. So we kind of grew up together, kind of. My mom and his parents went to the same church. And he was a good guy, like I said. He was a youth pastor, son of a pastor. His family was involved in the church that we attended. And so I fell into that group. And That's a part of my story, being a member of that church. So his name was Josh. Josh and I ended up getting married. I'm going to go back a little bit. I was introduced to this program through a court card, and it wasn't my court card. It was actually a guy that I was dating's court card. It was a very, very abusive relationship. And he told me to go and get the court card signed for him. And if I didn't, I would get in trouble. And I was just like, why not? Let's just go get this thing, signed. So I put his card in the basket, and I would attend these meetings. And I made a lot of friends there in the program. And I remember the first time someone took a cake. This woman must have been like 60 years old. And she celebrated a cake for like 14, And I was just like, God, you guys are so naive. I didn't understand that you guys were celebrating time in the program. I found out later, but, I still remember that day. That was like my first meeting. There was my introduction, and I had absolutely no idea, in God's world, there are no accidents, there are no mistakes, and it's just so funny to me that like that would be my introduction to the program, that would come in handy later. So, like I said, I have a mother, and she's an Al-Anon, so I love that people from Al-Anon are here. She was a huge part of my story, and my mom is like the apple of my eye. I love that woman with all my heart. I would take a bullet for that woman, and she was a huge part of my story. So, fast forward again, back to where I was. I grew to have a lot of friends, so I didn't, like I said, AA kind of became this thing that faded into the background. And so all my friends were kind of like not AA related. And, I would attend parties with them, or we'd have social events. And, sometimes they would ask me, like, Julie, aren't you going to have anything to drink? And I'd be like, I don't really drink. I'm sober. So they knew that I was an alcoholic, that I identified as an alcoholic. But I don't think that they really understood what that meant. I think that in their heads, I'm gonna move this closer. I think that in their heads they thought, you know, maybe she gets a little tipsy, you know, she passes out on the couch, it's cute, you know what I mean. And my ex-husband, he knew that I was an alcoholic too, you know, but I think he thought the same thing. So we ended up getting married in July of 2007. And we got married and we went on a cruise for our honeymoon. We were on this cruise, and by this point, the disease of alcoholism, it started to peek its little head up, you know, it started to rear its little head up into my life, you know, and it would come out in things like, we were on this cruise, you know, and it was, at night it would turn into like a booze cruise, you know, they had like, you know, the dance halls and stuff like that, and we would go and we'd attend, and he's a normie, you know, so he would drink. We made friends with like these other couples, and they would drink and they'd get hammered, you know, but they'd be all right. And I remember turning to him and I'd be like, you know, I think I might want to have like a drink or two. And he'd be like, I don't think that's a good idea, you know, and it never really turned into anything. And we came home and nothing happened, you know, but little things like that where it's just like, I think it would be really nice to have a drink, you know. And then it would go away and nothing would happen. And so July 2007. We'd been married for about like two months, you know, and we went to a wedding, and it was one of my best friend's wedding, and she was part of our church group, and I remember just, you know, being at the reception, and it was like a group of us, we're just kind of talking, socializing in a circle, and then my friend Margaret, she comes up, you know, and she's got all these drinks in her hands, and she just kind of passes them out in this circle that we have, and she hands me a drink, and I remember looking at this drink, and it was like everything faded, you know, everything else just kind of got quiet, and it was like tunnel vision, me and this beverage that I had, it was like whiskey on ice or something like that, and I was just like, oh, wow, you know, thinking about it, it's just like, holy smokes, and I just took a drink, you know, and that was it, nothing happened, you know, I am a party girl, I love to party. I love the dance floor. I love the music. When I'm drunk, there is no better dancer than me. I'm the best dancer in the world. Somebody call Soul Train and get this girl because that's what I want. So, you know, that day I took a drink and I told my husband about it. And he's like, you know, I'm really nervous about this. And I was like, you know what? It'll be all right. You know, and I really genuinely thought that. I was like, you know, I was 20 when I got sober that time. I was 25 when I got married, you know, so I was like, maybe I was just too young before. Maybe I was too young. My thing is like math, you know, I love to freebase, you know, and maybe that was my problem. And so, you know, I just thought, you know, I'm going to be a responsible social drinker like my friends. You know, I have these friends who are responsible social drinkers. And that was in September. And by November, it was the day after Thanksgiving, and things just were just, God, I can't, it was really, really bad. My drinking started to get really, really heavy. You know, a lot of that time, I can't remember. But it's funny, you know, because it was all like Groundhog Day, you know, it was all kind of the same day. But there's a lot of time during that period that I don't remember. By November, things that's already started getting really bad. I'm a big wine drinker. You know, I don't know if it's because I feel like it makes me look like an adult. You know, like if you drink a lot of whiskey, you know, people think like, oh, you know, you feel so dumb. But, you know, there's that whole mommy wine culture, you know, that exists nowadays. So I thought like maybe, maybe I can get by with just people seeing me drink like wine. I'm not sure what exactly it was, but it was the day after Thanksgiving. And I'm stumbling to bed like I do every night at that point. And I've got my bottle of wine and I have my little wine glass. And I go and I lay down. I go and I sit down on the bed and I set this wine glass and this bottle of wine on the nightstand and I lay down. And that's the last thing I remember. The next thing I remember is waking up, you know, it's just kind of coming out of this like haze, and I'm in this dark room and I see kind of like, you know, the light, you know, like a hallway, and it's light, And reflexively, I kind of went to move my hands and my legs, and I couldn't move my hands and my legs. And I realized that, like, I was strapped down to a gurney. I'd been strapped down to a gurney in this hospital bed. I woke up in the hospital, and I had, like, a tube in my nose, and I was on IV, and I had a catheter inside of me, and my ex-husband, spoiler alert, my ex-husband was sitting over here on the side of the bed to my right, and my ex-father-in-law was at the foot of the bed. And I remember turning to my ex-husband and saying, like, what happened, you know? And he said that sometime during the night, I had gone into my in-law's medicine cabinet, and I swallowed like a bottle of my ex-father-in-law's medication. And I was like, I do not remember that. And to this day, I don't remember any of that happening. And so they had to pump my stomach that night in the hospital. And he said that was the third time I'd woken up that night and asked him that question. And that my dad went to go visit me. I don't remember that. My sister went to go visit me. My stepmom was there. I do not remember that. And, you know, that was a big, big mess. I was placed under a 5150 after that for 3 days. And that was, you know, a whole mess in itself. It was around the, you know, my ex-father-in-law, he's the pastor of a really, really big church in the city that he lives in. So the congregation is like 300 plus, you know? So it kind of became this, you know, this kind of scandal, you know, in the community, because it's a big community. And the name in that community is well known. So I know that, you know, there was gossip and there were rumors flying, and it was centered around me, you know, and the embarrassing things that I would do. There were Christmas pageants that occurred, you know, and I remember kind of stumbling down the Christmas pageant. I do remember that, and just kind of stepping over people just drunk and then leaving again to go and drink some more, little things like that. And my drinking started to be a problem. When I was in the hospital, you know, it had only been about 2 months, you know, and things were already starting to get really, really bad, like I said. And I could feel my life kind of down spiraling very, very quickly. I was already feeling the effects of my disease, you know, and when I say that, I don't mean just like physical, I mean like spiritual too. I could feel that spiritual sickness settling in. And there was a nurse that came into the room, and there was a whiteboard. You know, she came and she kind of erased this whiteboard, and she put up her name. You know, my name is so-and-so, I'm your nurse. And I look over at her and I was like, are you a nurse? And she says, yes, I am. And I said, I wanted to be a nurse too. You know, and I was just devastated, you know. I said, I wanted to be a nurse too. And she says, you still can be. You know, and I don't know why that just kind of like landed and it planted a seed inside of me. Because here was a woman who saw me at my worst. Like, that was one of the worst times in my life. She saw what had happened to me. And she told me that I could still be one of them, you know. And so I decided to go to nursing school after that. And in 2010, I finally signed up for nursing school. And I did that whole program drunk. I was in school for 2 years, just absolutely wasted. I would show up to class smelling like gin. I remember talking to one of my friends at one of the desks behind me, and he's like, here you go, Julie, you need this. And it was like a stick of gum, you know, kind of things like that. We would go on our lunch breaks to like BJ's, you know, and they would get like a beer, and I would drink whatever they wouldn't drink. And, you know, my house was the house to go to, you know, during breaks to like, you know, go and get like wasted because I lived really close to the school. And somehow I made it through that program. And I, in May of 2010, we all decided to, you know, we'd signed up for school in, I think it was like January or something like that. But we signed up, you know, and then in May, we decided that we'd all go out, you know, hang out and party. And I think we were celebrating like, you know, having like a big test, like a quarterly test or something like that. And we all passed. And, you know, we got pretty hammered. And you know, it was time to go. I think that they were closing up shop there. And one of my friends, I remember her name was Bridget, she was like, Julie, are you okay to go? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. I just live down the way, you know, it'll be okay. And later on, she said that, you know, she was talking to this other group of my friends, and they're like, we shouldn't have let her leave. And I got in my car, and I think I got maybe two blocks when I see a black and white pull up behind me. And I'm like, all right, act cool, you know, like, just, you're okay. My brake lights weren't working, so I did the whole, like, you know, the blinkers weren't working. I was like, is it left? Is it right? You know, I'm doing the robot in my car, kind of situation. And, you know, I thought I was, you know, playing it pretty cool. I turned up the radio. I had nothing to hide, you know. And they pulled me over, surprisingly. They pulled me over. And, you know, they did the whole breathalyzer thing. I had a whole bunch of Ativan in that car, and like a whole bunch of weed. And when they pulled me over, he's like, all right, you know, license and registry. I gave him my license. And like when he went to go check my license, I just like stuffed the weed in my mouth and I ate it. They never found the Ativan, you know, and I was really surprised by that, you know, but I did get, you know, a DUI, you know. And that was, that was awful. And, you know, that in itself, you know, it was something that I had to explain to the board of nurses later. You know, because of that, I had to wait a whole year after graduating to get my license. And I had to write a letter to the board of nurses telling them what happened. And, you know, all my friends were on Facebook. I got my license. I passed the NCLEX, you know, and I'm over here like nothing to show. You know, and by the time I did get my license, it was just like, I was too ashamed. It's like, why are you, it's been a year, Julie, you know, kind of situation. So, you know, that's jails, institutions, you know, and, you know, I have absolutely no idea why I decided to. It was like an accidental overdose in the hospital. So it was like, you know, I don't know what would have happened if my ex-husband hadn't found me, you know, because every night I was loaded, every night. I don't know what was different about that night, you know. So, you know, near death, I guess. What ended up, you know, at that point, I was ready. I'd been ready for so long to just, like, stop drinking. I had this job I had a private patient that I was working with, and I would just show up every morning to her house just hungover and sick. It started to get really, really bad. It had been bad for a long time. You know, there were nights where I would be, you know, I'd look at the clock and I'd have to be up to work at 6 a.m. And I remember, you know, I'd go to work, I'd wake up hungover and I'd be like, oh my God, like this cannot happen again. Like I'd just be so sick. I would have like migraine strength headaches and, you know, I'd get to my work and I'd have to walk like a few blocks to get to work. And there'd be times where I'd get so sick that I would like, you know, dry heave, you know, or like throw up in a bush, like on my way to my job. And that was every single day for like 6 years, you know, I lived that way. And I'd be at work just hungover. The son-in-law of this patient that I had, he was an alcoholic too. I mean, I know that for a fact that he was, and he kept this bottle of vodka in the freezer. And I would go when no one was home, or like when I thought that no one was watching, I would go and I would just like take a few slugs of this vodka. And then I'd go and take care of my patient. I'd administer medications drunk, you know? So, you know, I would get home and I'd be like, all right, I'd be at work and I'd be like, I'm not doing this anymore. I cannot do this anymore. This has to stop. And by 3 o'clock, I'd start to feel a little bit better, you know? And then by like 5, I'd be like, you know what? I'm okay. You know, I'm just going to have like one. I'm going to have two. I'm just going to have two bottles of wine, you know, it'll be all right. And, you know, it would happen all over again. It would be, I'd have to wake up at 6 a.m. and I would look at the clock and I'd be like, all right, it's 10 o'clock right now. If I stop drinking right now, if I fall asleep right now, I will get 8 hours of sleep. And then, you know, time would pass and I'd be like, all right, it's 12. If I stop right now, 6 hours. And then I'd look at the clock and it'd be like 3 a.m. and I'd be like, oh my God. Like, how did this happen again? You know, or like the worst parts would be like, you know, where I'd be like up and I would see like the sun coming in through the blinds. And I'd be like, how the hell did this happen again? How did I let this happen again? And I knew that I'd have to be up in a couple of hours. And I knew that I wouldn't be able to function. I'm 41, and if I get 6 hours of sleep or less, I wake up like dead. You know, it's awful. I cannot function. I need my sleep. And so, you know, that's how I lived my life for a really, really long time. What ended up happening was, you know, when I drink and I use, I get very, very, I turn into an animal. I'm not a nice person. And I told you that, you know, my ex-husband was a very, very good man. And I'm very abusive. I'm very physically abusive. And there was a lot of domestic abuse in my house, a lot of domestic abuse in my house on my part, you know? And it was not pretty. And, you know, there were days, I have a little girl. It's so funny because I see, you know, I see kids here. And my daughter, she grew up in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, her dad is sober too. And, you know, she'd be running around the meetings, you know, as a little kid. Or she'd be sitting in the back just like, you know, drawing as a kid. She's a part of my story later. You know, but she'd be in the house sometimes when that would happen. You know, and she'd get so scared that she'd have to leave. You know, so that. And I also, I'm unfaithful. You know, I'm not monogamous. You know, when I'm sober, I cheat, I lie all the time. And like I said, this was a very, very good man. He took care of me. He put up with my garbage for 6 years. You know, and the only time he ever put hands on me was when I was getting too aggressive, and he'd have to hold me, you know, to make me stop. And until I passed out sometimes, you know. So that ended up happening. And one day, you know, like I said, I'd already been done. This is a part that I forgot to mention. When I was, when I got my DUI, I remember I'd already been finished. Sick all the time, spiritually depleted. And I was standing in front of the judge. I was at court in my court days. And I remember turning over to my public defender. And I was like, do you think, please, that you can ask him for mandatory AA meetings, please? Because I felt like that was the only way that I was going to get into these rooms. You know, because I just could not do it on my own. I could not stop. No matter how bad it got. And it got really, really bad. There was a lot of stuff that I left out. You know, a lot of stuff that I left out that was just awful, awful stuff. And she looks at me and she's like, she says, no, because we don't want him to think that you have a problem. And she didn't know, you know, she just wanted to make this go away. You know, it was just an accident. You know, she doesn't have a problem. And I remember thinking, that's it. Like, this is my only chance. And like, there it goes. You know, it's just evaporated. My only chance to finally get back into these rooms. So, we were at my ex-in-law's house. They went to, my ex-father-in-law and my ex-mother-in-law, they went to Europe for maybe like 2 months. And so they asked us to house sit for them. And, you know, I'm doing the same foolishness at their house that I was at ours. And, you know, my ex-husband, he found out about one of the affairs that I was having. And he had just had it. He was like, I'm done with you. I'm done. And I was, you know, I was devastated. I knew that this time he was serious. He was 100% serious. You know, he was livid. I'd never seen him so angry in my life, and I was afraid. And, I was like, you know, I was begging him. I was like, please, please, I'm so sorry. Please, like, I'll stop drinking. He was just not having it. He was absolutely 100% done. And so I'm trying to negotiate some kind of reconciliation with this man. And he wasn't giving in. And, you know, we're sitting in his parents' bedroom. They got this queen-size bed. He's sitting on one edge of the bed, and I'm sitting on the other. And he's not budging. And I just remember just crying out to God. You know, I looked up at the ceiling, and I, out loud, I said, we need help. We need help. And when I said that, I was just like, we do. You know, our marriage is in, like, it's falling apart. You know, we need help right now. Like, I need to fix this with him. And all I said was like, you know, get the F out of here. It's like, okay. And so I took the car. We were also, you know, we also had his parents' car. So I took their car and I took it to our apartment. And, that was June 28th of 2013. I had my last drink. I didn't know that it was going to be my last drink. It was like three swigs of vodka. It's always vodka. It was three swigs of vodka that was in our fridge. And I don't know why, but like my thought was just like, get your ass to a meeting right now. And so I got in the car and I drove to this little clubhouse in Glendale. And on my way there, I crashed the car because I was drunk driving. And, you know, I had to make amends for that. And I went to a meeting and I cried. Even if I hadn't identified, you would have known that I was an alcoholic because of just how I looked. I had like this thin layer of sweat all over my body. I'd been wearing clothes that I'd been like sleeping in for like the past two nights. My hair wasn't like, I hadn't brushed it in like a week, you know? And I'm sobbing throughout the entire meeting. And I raised my hand when they asked if there was newcomers. And for the first time in 6 years, I had identified as an alcoholic, you know? And, you know, after that, I just thought, you know, I guess I'm just going to go home and leave. And God had different plans because this stampede of women just came over me. And they just surrounded me. You know, they would not let me leave, these women. Like, they would not let me leave. And they're talking to me at the same time. And I'm just like, no, do you have a sponsor? Can I have your number? What's it? Here's my number, you know. And I'm just like, oh, God, you know. And they're like, you need a sponsor. And I'm like, okay, you know. I was like, will you be my sponsor? I asked the girl that was right in front of me. And she says, no, but she will, you know. And they pointed me to this short little adorable, sweet baby angel who eventually became my sponsor. Her name was Kendra D, and she was amazing. She saved my life, this woman. And I did whatever she told me to do. If she said jump, I'd say how high. She said, get your ass to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I went to about 180 meetings in 90 days because it's like, what the hell else was I going to do? I had no job. You know, at that point, I'd been looking for a job, and I'd missed so many job interviews because I was just hungover all the time. You know, I'd missed my 8 o'clock appointment with, like, this job, and it never really worked out. And, I know that God's always been with me, even when I was drinking, because when I asked for help, I didn't say what kind of help, you know? I meant, help me with my marriage, and God sent me back here. And I think he was just waiting, you know? I think God was just waiting. And God said, it's time, you know? And so that whole thing happened. I thought it was the worst thing that ever happened to me, you know? But I had absolutely no idea that, like, you know, that would bring me back to you. Sorry, I found out like right before coming into this meeting that like one of my friends passed away. My mind is just racing right now. Anyway, just a little emotional. He was in the program, you know, he was sober, but he had a heart attack, poor thing. And he was so young too. Anyway, Alcoholics Anonymous has always been so good to me. I only have about 15 minutes left, but, you know, there's so much that I want to share. I'm going to share a story. I love service. I love being of service to Alcoholics Anonymous. I have like 5 meetings that I attend on a weekly basis, and then I have like 4 commitments at those, you know, out of the 5, you know. So I'm a firm believer of being of service. When I first came into the program, I was flat broke. I was living on nothing but the savings that we had in our bank account. And I was a brand new nurse, and all I could get was like this part-time job. And all it did, you know, that paycheck was pay for the rent, you know, that of the place that I was staying at. And, you know, I didn't have a car at the time. And so the only times, like, there was no food in the fridge for me. I got to like my high school weight during that time. So there was no food in the fridge, and the only times that I would eat sometimes were when I went to meetings. You know, if you guys had cookies, I was having cookies for dinner. If you guys had leftovers, I was having the leftovers for breakfast. So So it's just like there would be like a time, it's no different than it is now sometimes, you know, but like there would be times where I would have like, you know, like 3-4 cookies for dinner sometimes, you know, and then I would go home, you know, and it's like at least I was fed, you know. And I remember, you know, I had this circle of women who were very, very supportive of me. It was like 7 women. And I'm not one of those people where it's like if you gave me your number, I'd be like, ugh, you know, I was calling you. You gave me your number. I'm going to call you. Like, where's the meeting? You know, and they were so kind to me. They would give me rides. You know, sometimes they would pay for my dinner, you know, if we would go out, you know, because they knew that I was broke, you know. But they were always of service, these women. And so there was this time when, you know, I was... At that point, I was still trying to reconcile, and my sponsor told me, she's like, you are not allowed to call your ex-husband if you decide that you have something important to tell him. And when I mean important, you know, I mean that you have to run it by me first, and I will tell you whether or not this is appropriate for you to send to him. Because I was harassing him for like the first few weeks. And so she's like, you run it by me, and we will email him, you know? But other than that, you cannot come into contact with him. It's like, all right. And so he sends me this email, and I worked in Long Beach at the time. I lived in Glendale, and I didn't have a car. And so I had to be at work at 11 p.m., and that means that I have to be at the bus stop at 7 p.m. if I want to make rent, because this was the only job that I could get, and I didn't have a car. So, I would have to go to the bus stop, get on the bus to the subway station, take the subway to the train station, take the train to Long Beach. And that whole thing was about 3 hours. You know, if I wanted to feed myself at the time, that's what I had to do. And so I remember getting on the bus, and, you know, I had just gotten on the bus. My phone was at 97%. And I get this email from my ex-husband, and it says, Julie, I need you to be out of the house on Thursday of next week because I'm coming to pick up my PlayStation, the television, and the rest of my clothes. And I started to panic. I was like, that's it. That's all there is at the house. Like, he's serious. He's not going to come back. Like, what am I going to do? And so I texted these women, and I was like, can you please pray for me? Because my ex-husband sent me this email. He says that he's going to pick up the PlayStation. He's going to leave me, and we're not going to reconcile, and it's got, you know, everything's going to go to shit. And so they're like, yes, Julie, we'll pray for you. You know, and it's like, I did this on a daily basis, and they were just probably so sick and tired of me. You know, yes, we'll pray for you. You know, and that was it, you know? You know, and I come from the church, you know? And it's like, if we say, like, we're going to pray for you, I'll pray for you. You know, I might forget, you know, I don't know. But I had one friend attached to that, was a brand new friend. His name was Marcos. And he sends me this text, and he says, yes, Julie, I'll pray for you. God, please be with Julie. I pray that you would please bless her sobriety and help her reconcile with her ex-husband. And it was this long, beautiful text. And I was just like, I think that was the moment where I realized, I was like, wow, I'm so selfish. Like, I take so much. You know, because all these people were telling me, yes, I will. But this person actually took time out of his day to write this long prayer for me. And I realized, you know, like, so, you know, I was like, wow, thank you so much. It's beautiful. Is there anything that I can pray for you for? And he said, yes, you know, and I was like, okay, you know, I sent him this long text back. And I was like, wow, I didn't know that he had this situation going on. And so I texted the other women. I was like, you guys, thank you so much. Is there anything that I can pray for you for? And every single one of those women said yes. And at not one point did I ask them what I could do for them. I was always thinking about myself. And that's the moment that I realized that my head was so far up my own ass that I was, you know, so self-centered that I had absolutely no idea that there were other people experiencing life problems other than myself. You know, there was so much shame behind that. You know, and I realized at that moment that I'm nothing but a taker. You know, this program has been so good to me. Like I said, people, I had a friend in the program. I didn't know her. I'd known her for maybe a few weeks. And like I said, I had nothing in the fridge. She took her EBT card and she took me grocery shopping and she bought me food. And You know, other people did that kind of stuff too. You know, they'd take me to buy coffee. You know, they'd take time out of their day to do step work with me. And that's why I say today, like, service is so important. You know, to be of service to this program that has, helped save your lives. You know, like, fed you. You know, giving you friends, you know, relationships. And so, after I was done praying for them, I sent a text to my mother, you know, and to, you know, my sister and my dad, you know, and then when I was done with them, I sent them to, like, other people that I knew. And when I was done with them, I was like, all right, let's keep this going. You know, we got a good thing going on here, let's keep this going. And so I started to pray for people on the bus. And when I was off of the bus, you know, we went down to the subway station, and at that time, you couldn't get any reception down there. So I was like, put the phone away. I pray for that guy with the red sweater. I pray for that guy with the blue hat. You know, that woman with the blonde wig. Like, if you were there on the bus or on my way there, you were getting a prayer. And, you know, I got off that, took the train, same thing there, all the way to work. 3 hours of this, of nonstop prayers for people. And I finally got off the train, praying for people in that building, bus stop, whatever. So I finally reached my destination. And you know, it's dark in Long Beach. There was like, I'm like right next to the place that I'm supposed to work at, but I've got 15 minutes. I'm going to be there for like 8 or 12 hours. I can't remember. And I don't want to get there early. You know, I want to spend like a little bit of time just outside before I have to go in for a couple of hours. And off in the distance, I see, you know, there's a basketball court. You know, I'm the only one on the street. I see a basketball court, and there's a man playing basketball. You know, there's like this singular light shining on him. And, you know, he finishes up with his game, and he walks, you know, and I'm kind of like, you know, on the street there. He bounces his ball, and he passes by me. He says, hey. I said, good evening. And he says, good evening. He says, it's a beautiful night. And I said, yes, it is. And he says, hey, do you want to go grab a drink? You know, I'm going to go, you know, over to this bar here. Do you want to go grab a drink with me? And I was like, oh, you know what? No, thanks. I got to go into work in a little bit. Thanks so much for asking. He's like, all right. And so he starts to walk away. And something, you know, he's a little ways away, maybe like 2 yards away. And, you know, I get this feeling. It's just this feeling of knowing. And, you know, I call out to him. And I was like, excuse me. And he turns around. And I was like, you know, weird question. I'm so sorry to ask. But is there anything that I can pray for you for? You know, and it's really quiet. He's like, what? You know, and I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I pissed this guy off. You know, like, things are going to get ugly. And I was like, sorry, you know, I don't know. I just thought that I'd asked, you know. And, you know, he starts to approach me. And he looks at me, and he kind of looks at his feet. He's like, yeah, you can pray for me. He says, I'm an alcoholic, and I can't stop drinking. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, me too. You know, I've got 45 days of sobriety in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and he kind of looked at me surprised, and he's like, what's that? And he'd never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, and I gave him the number, I told him what it was, and I gave him the number to central office. And I was like, you just call them, and they'll be able to help you, you know? And, you know, that was it. That was the last time, the only time that I ever saw him. His name was Raphael. And I said, you know, I'll pray for you. Thank you. And so, you know, I looked at that, and it was like that was the only person that I spoke to the whole time on my way to work. And I believe that somewhere between the email that I got and work, that somewhere between that I crossed into holy ground. You know, that I transitioned into, is it the fourth dimension that Bill talks about? You know, and it was because I relieved myself of this self-obsession that I was suffering from. And I experienced a miracle, you know? And I told my mom about it, and my mom's super Christian, super Al-Anon, she's so sweet. And she was like, I'll pray for him. And so she put him in her Bible. And, you know, I'm not religious, you know, but there's this part in the Bible, and it goes, woe to me, I cried. I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. and my eyes have seen the King, God Almighty. Then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hands, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it he touched my mouth and said, "See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for." Then I heard the voice of God saying, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" And I said, "Here I am, send me." And that's kind of been my creed since then. You know, like, if I can be of service, then I'll be of service. You know, if someone asked me to drive up here, it's like a 3-hour drive, okay. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous has done so much more for me than I could ever pay back. I ended up making amends to my ex-husband. It was at around year 6 that I made amends to him. We went to this coffee shop, and I was like, you know, do you know why I brought you here? It was my mistake because I didn't tell him why I took him there, you know. And he's like, "Yeah, I think so." And I said, "I'm here to make amends for you, you know, for the abuse that I put you through, and most importantly, for never being the wife that you deserved, because you're a good man." And he just started to cry, you know. 6 years later, he started to cry. And I was like, wow, even after 6 years, like, the consequences of my actions are, you know, still prevalent. You know, he was still haunted by that, you know. And I was like, is there anything, how can I make this better? And my sponsors always told me, like, you make the amends and you shut the fuck up. You zip it and you throw it away. You ask them what you can do to make it better. You know, and he told me what, you know, he wanted me to do. I was like, okay. And so, you know, I worked on that. I've worked on, you know, making some of the amends. I got 5 minutes. I told you guys that I have a daughter, and she grew up in this program. Her grandmother, she's an Al-Anon, but she's one of us. Her grandfather's one of us. I'm obviously one of us. Her dad is one of us. And she grew up in these rooms. And, you know, I knew she was a heavy drinker, you know? And I was just like, wow, we got so lucky. Like, it skipped a generation. Like, yes, you know? And then I get a phone call in April, and I was like, hey, and it's her. She's like, the first thing she says is, "I'm going to tell you something. I don't want you to worry because I know how you are." And I was like, what is it? You know? And she says, "I've been going to AA meetings." And I was like, oh, God. I was like, oh, and I was just so worried. I was like, why? You know, and she's like, you know why. And I was just like, oh my God. Like, I had no idea. You know, she was so good at keeping it under wraps. And she's been okay so far, but for a long time it took her some time to find a sponsor. You know, and we go to the same Thursday night meeting, you know, and my sponsor's like, you know, stay out of her sobriety. You let her have her own experience. And it was so, so hard for me to do because I'm like a helicopter mom. You know, she's 26, you know, and I'm still like, what's wrong? You know, whenever she calls, you know, I'm just like that kind of a mother. And, you know, to just let it go was just, you know, when she came in, you know, and having to experience, you know, just watching her just try to get this and find a sponsor. She has 3 different women, you know, if they could be her sponsor, and you know, each one of them had to drop her, you know, because they were my sobriety sisters, so they had to drop her immediately after, you know, she had asked them, you know. So it was just like, you know, this is her first time in the program and she's getting all these like rejections. Like, what is she going to think? You know, that this thing that she doesn't belong, that she's never going to get this, you know. And it was a new kind of powerlessness that I had absolutely no idea, you know, existed. Like I can't, I just have to stand by and just watch her get this, you know. You know, but she's okay. She's all right. And we she'll call me now, like after like her Tuesday meeting, and she'll be like, oh my God, like, you know, I saw this newcomer, or like, you know, like I'm experiencing this spiritual awakening, and it's just like, I don't know, I'm just so grateful. And she shared one time, she was my 10 minute one time when I went to speak at a meeting. And one of the things she said was, I'm so grateful to AA because it gave me my family back, my parents back, you know? And it gave me her back. You know, so that's good. That's great. I love our 10 minutes pitch. You know, congratulations. You're going to have a baby. Oh my God. Like when I had my daughter, it was like the most beautiful day of my life, you know, so you have that to look forward to. And so I'm the speaker seeker for a lot of meetings. I've been the speaker seeker for several years for like different meetings. And I remember I got this speaker that I'd gotten like the first time I got sober at a meeting, and I was like, this is a great speaker, you guys are gonna love his pitch. And he went up to the podium and he shared his story, and he shared the end, and he's like, thank you for letting me share. And I was like, that's not how it ends, you know, like you, it ends like this, you know. And that's when I realized, I was like, if you stick around long enough, the end changes, you know, like things happen. He ended up, you know, having twin boys, you know, and when I first knew him, like he was, you know, it was a completely different, you know, those boys didn't exist, you know. And that's one of the lovely things about AA, is that the end is always changing, you know. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. If it's good, it'll change. If it's bad, it'll change. I've gotten a, you know, I've had my wonderful moments in AA. There's a lot of times when I look and I'm in a moment and I'm like, I could have missed this, you know. I could have missed this moment here. My daughter ended up getting engaged in December, and I knew about it. You know, I was invited to go. Like, what? You know, I couldn't see her. You know, I wasn't invited to see her when she was younger, because I was like, you know, on a 3-day meth binge, you know, and I'm over here being invited to go witness her get engaged. And she got engaged, and it was so beautiful, and it was so funny, you know, the way that it happened. And I ended up bringing, because I didn't know, this really, really fancy champagne, you know, and she drank what I thought was like a lady, you know. She ended up drinking, and I heard her pitch from the podium, and she was like, I was completely blacked out after that, you know. And she shares that she did miss it, you know, and I'm over here sharing that, like, I could have missed it. You know, and it's just so strange. You know, there's a correlation there. You know, but like I said, she's okay now. So that's one of the goods. You know, and for me, you know, this is a big deal. I had a dog. His name was Biz, Biscuit, and I had him for 15 years. You know, 15 years with this dog. He was actually on my amends list, this dog, you know, because I was such a terrible person before. I was scary, you know, and he would leave the room whenever I'd be in the room with him, you know. So my amends look like, you know, you get him a dog walker once, 1 hour at the dog park one day, you know, and 3 other walks the other days. You feed him turkey and rice instead of the kibble, you know, things like that. That's what my amends look like. And, you know, one night, you know, he came up on the bed and he was very, very happy and sweet. And then the next morning, I noticed that he wouldn't eat. And this dog ate everything, you know. And I was like, what's going on, you know? And so I have cameras all over my apartment, and I'm watching him while I'm at work, you know, in my cameras. And he's just kind of staying in one place, and he's not moving. And I was like, oh God, no, please, like 15 years with this little guy. Like, I'm not ready. And I took him in the bed, you know, and they kept him overnight, you know, and I was willing to pay whatever price they asked because I was just not ready. And then, you know, I woke up in the morning. They're like, no news is good news. So I woke up in the morning and I didn't hear anything, and I was like, okay, good, great. And then I get the call, and I'm just like, oh God. And they're like, can you come by? And I was like, okay. And so I had to make the decision to put him down. And that was very hard. It was... there was times in this you know, vet room where I just wanted to scream. I literally wanted to scream because I was just like so sad and just not ready. And I was there with him, you know, and they put him to sleep. And it was such a hard time for me. And I could have missed it. I could have missed being there with him, even though it was sad. You know, he could have passed away by himself. You know, but I decided to be there with him. You know, and that was part of my amends. You know, and then after that, I ended up adopting, like, these other two dogs. So I have four now. And one of them is completely blind. He's always bumping into things, you know. The other one, I think she was abused. And if you're wondering what it's like to have four dogs, just imagine you're drowning and someone hands you a dog. That's what it's like to have four dogs. But my life is okay. You know, it's all right right now. And it has its goods and it has its bads. But that's just life on life's terms. You know, when I first came into these rooms, all I wanted was my life back, you know, and I never got it. I didn't get my life back. I got a whole new life, you know, one that I didn't think I would ever, ever have. And I wasn't expecting, you know, I never thought that I'd be happy with what I have. I never thought I'd have four dogs, you know, like a, you know, daughter who was engaged, or like, you know, that one of my puppies would pass and, you know, all that stuff. There's this line in the book, and it says, "What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proven to be the loving and powerful hand of God." You know, and I thought my life was completely over when I first walked into these rooms. And like I said, you know, like, sobriety is the best birthday present that I'd ever received. I got my life back. I got a life that I never thought, you know, I could have. And I owe it all to people like you, and I don't know you, but I love you and I wish the best for you. If you're new, stick around and hang on to your seat, because you're in for the ride of your life. Thank you so much.